everyone, and welcome to the latest podcast from the BRC. I'm Stephen Bethel, I'm Corporate Affairs Director at the BRC, and today we're talking about COVID-19 and the impact it's had on consumer behaviour. I'm joined today by Matt Clark, who's from consulting firm Alex Partners. Matt, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, thanks, Stephen. So, hi everyone. I'm Matt Clark. I co-lead the EMEA practice for retail within Alex Partners, which is a global management consulting firm. I've been doing retail transformation for the last 20 years in consulting roles, having had an industry career before that. And it'd be fair to say that never before have we seen, obviously, the level of disruption that we're currently seeing in the market. So it is a fascinating and sometimes challenging time to be doing that type of work, but plenty to talk about.
Yes, definitely plenty to talk about. And also, I think good timing for the conversation. So we've just had non-essential retail has just recently reopened. Things seem to be progressing well. Our members, you know, there seems to be a general sense of optimism. Whether or not they'll ever get fully back to normal is something we might discuss. But things seem to be getting back to something like normal slowly but surely. And it's been a huge disruption, you know, with non-essential retail shut for most of the year. We estimate that there's been £22 billion of lost store sales in 2020 in that part of the industry. And obviously, there's been a massive change in shopping behaviour from consumers. And all that has drawn a big dividing line right across retail. So you've got, you know, huge increases in sales on the food side of things, as hospitality and out-of-home retail has basically stopped for the last 12 months. And then the sort of lots going on in the non-food side, you know, electronics, DIY, et cetera, doing really, really well, but beauty, fashion and footwear much less well. And really the sort of the shopping behavior mirroring the quirks of the pandemic. People locked up at home need to equip a new home office, but not much need for new shoes. There's been loads of positives as well. I mean, a great year of innovation for the retail industry, you know, dealing with huge demand, but also standing on up online operations and, you know, coming up with ever creative new ways to reach customers. So a hell of a lot going on. But I guess a big question now for as we are coming out of the pandemic, hopefully, is, you know, what does all this mean? And I think a key question on a lot of our members' minds is it's when or to what extent things rebalance. So when do the sales rebalance? When do people stop doing everything online and start going back to stores? And then you touched on it, Matt, but everyone's talking about COVID having accelerated the transformation in retail. It's a bit of a cliche at the moment, but, you know, is that true? What from COVID is a permanent change and what's here to stay and what's sort of temporary? Those are the kind of seem to be pretty big questions at the moment. So hopefully that tees you up nicely, Matt. And you guys have just done some new research, which might provide some answers to some of those questions. So why don't you talk about that and let's see where we go.
Sure, thanks, Stephen. Yes, so absolutely. I mean, the key questions that you outline and trying to predict how consumer behaviour will normalise over the next few months is obviously hot topic number one on every retail boardroom, and certainly with all of our clients. The research that you referred to is an attempt on our part to help guide that discussion and provide some insight into what consumers' behaviour will adapt towards as we come out of the pandemic. So it's a piece of primary research with over 7,000 consumers across 9 countries. It was conducted for the second time in the winter months of this year, having done it originally first time round in the summer of last year. So we have a comparator set. And effectively, it starts to understand how consumers' behaviours and therefore their shopping habits have changed during the pandemic, and gets some kind of insight into how that might play out moving forward as we come out of the pandemic. And some really interesting insights. And the UK consumer, for example, more than half of the UK consumers have stated that their buying habits have been permanently altered by the pandemic, even though there's a very high degree of vaccine optimism, over 75% of the respondees, extremely positive about how things are moving forward. So some interesting findings, and we should probably dive into some of those specifics, Stephen. Where would you like to start?
Thanks, Matt. Before we get into the consumer details, that you talked about vaccine optimism. People are talking about sort of a consumer spending led recovery of the, you know, of the economy. Is that borne out by your research? Do you see this sort of demand being unleashed, you know, all this money that's in people's savings accounts, etc.? Do you see that flowing through to increase demand?
Well, it's really interesting because what we get out of the research, and indeed what we've already seen in some of the spending patterns as non-essential retail opens up, is that there's a large segment of the population, those that haven't really been affected too much by the pandemic, the white collar workers who've stayed at work and been working from home and saving their money. And of course, what you're seeing from that is a lot of pent up demand. And as soon as the shops reopen and when hospitality reopens properly in a couple of weeks' time, you would expect to see a real bounce back in consumer demand, particularly from that segment, the unaffected segment, if you like, of the population. And for the next few months, indeed, you would expect to see that bounce back play out during the course of the summer. So to a large extent, in the short term, yes, you would expect to see that. The interesting thing, and what perhaps the research points to from the other consumer segments who have been affected by the pandemic, is that once that immediate pent-up demand plays through, how things will settle down into whatever the new normal might be is perhaps more interesting and nuanced in the way it plays out. So by the time you get to the autumn, when you will start to see perhaps the longer term impact of any behavioral changes that's come out of the pandemic actually normalizing, then you would expect to see perhaps a slightly different picture.
That is interesting. I mean, you look at the research, it definitely looks like, you know, risk and opportunity perhaps in those kind of those consumer dimensions you've talked about. In fact, it might be good if you could introduce the four consumer dimensions that are in your research.
Sure, yeah. So the research really analyzes consumers across a couple of dimensions. So it looks at the people with health concerns, so those who've had COVID or have been worried about COVID or have had family who've been impacted by the pandemic specifically. And the other dimension is the financial concern, so those who've been put at risk or been on furlough and have further employment concerns moving forward, or have directly been impacted by loss of income, et cetera, during the course of the pandemic. So the segments break down into those that are least disruptive, so the people I just spoke about a minute ago, who have largely carried on regardless, if you like, and indeed probably have saved money and gained financial wealth on the back of the pandemic because there's been less to spend on. And then you have people who have been most impacted by health, so the health concern, the budget-constrained segment, where they've been directly impacted by loss of income during the pandemic. And then perhaps the more interesting one is the most anxious segment, which in the UK, we came out about a third of the population. And this is where both financial impact and health impact have come together. And it's often characterized actually by young families who've perhaps been impacted through, maybe they're employed by hospitality, et cetera, have had young children being educated at home, so have had to go through the mental stress of looking after children at the same time as trying to perhaps continue to work. And those people who have probably changed their habits the most are lying in that segment.
And that does, it sort of feels like a new breed of consumer maybe that's coming through in the research. What sort of shopping behaviors or what sort of behaviors would you expect to see from those consumers, and what sort of response do retailers and retail businesses need to think about to address those consumers' needs?
Well, I think the so what of it, as you allude to, Stephen, is that it's almost like a new customer segmentation approach for retailers. So traditional demographics don't necessarily apply to this segment of consumer who's now more anxious. And the so what of it is, yes, more online, less in-store because of health concerns, and of course, a lot more value-oriented purchasing as well. And therefore, the sort of adaptations that retailers are going through are understanding who in their traditional customer base would fall into this new consumer segment, and therefore changing both marketing techniques, but also thinking through the customer journey and what sort of channel is the best way to attract and retain those sort of customers. So things like, you've seen a lot of innovation, you referred to it earlier during the pandemic. So things like almost concierging of purchasing from, you know, web chat through to maybe even the phone, through to perhaps appointments in store to pick things up. We've seen this in the jewelry sector, for example, and electronics. So this sort of multimodal channel journey that takes consumers in a safe way through the purchasing, through a consultative purchasing journey, and provides a lot of the experience that people would have sought in store previously, but still allows them to do so remotely and in a safe way. This is a really interesting new channel that you would expect, to a large extent, quite a lot of that to stick post-pandemic.
So the other big question, there's an answer implicit in what you've just said, but to what extent is this shift to online retail permanent? To what extent does that rebalance? It sounds like you're saying it's going to stay maybe, you know, close to where it is at the moment.
The reality is, Stephen, of course, nobody really knows. And of course, the one thing that is certain in the months that are coming for retailers is a high degree of uncertainty, and therefore the need to be able to plan for multiple outcomes and be really agile in how you go after that is probably the single biggest so what that comes out of everybody's learning as we've gone through the pandemic. But some things are, you know, relatively predictable. So what you have got, of course, is a massive shift, for example, in sectors that weren't particularly online beforehand, so grocery, for example, into a far more online behavior. And a lot of the people who've gone online, the older populations who perhaps weren't online or weren't as online savvy beforehand, will have found that the convenience of online is really compelling. So you would expect quite a large degree of some of that online behavior to stick. I mean, some things are never new, right? So consumers will always seek value, convenience, and experience from their shopping trips, and in different measure, depending on whether it's a must-have purchase versus a nice-to-have purchase. And what you'll see is for the sort of must-have purchases like grocery and other similar must-have categories, you would expect the convenience of online to be really quite compelling for people. And of course, that brings into light quite a lot of challenge around channel profitability, given the way, in particular, the UK has adopted online as a deliver to home as a predominant mechanic. And so interesting differences when you look internationally in that regard. So I think some things you would expect some of the online behavior to stick. All of it, probably not, because frankly, people will change their habits when they're able to and feel more comfortable in doing so. But you are likely to see at least half of the shift to stick in certain categories for sure. And the research we did showed that grocery and clothing accessories were the two biggest shifts online and likely to remain so.
There are big questions in there for retail, you know, for retailers and people running retail businesses. Online retail is sort of structurally much, much lower margin. And then you've got the sort of, you've got businesses with large property portfolios. Yeah, there are big existential sort of structural questions there. How would you sort of place your bets looking ahead 2-5 years as if you're running a retail business?
Yeah, I think to your point, I think different sectors have slightly different challenges. If I continue on the grocery theme, clearly there where the vast majority of online delivery is a ship from store model, for the grocers, you know, they've already paid to put the products on the shelf in the supermarket. So then they are then paying again to pick them back off the shelves, put them in a van and deliver them to home. So the economics and the economic impact of that additional cost for the deliver to home model is significant. And you would expect to see some real innovation on the back of that to improve channel productivity, both sort of standard in-store productivity, but also thinking through sort of micro CFC type options to reduce the cost of delivery to home. But also, and again, this is when you look at what other countries are doing, thinking about different models. So, you know, the US is a very good example of where curbside or, you know, click and collect type delivery models is highly incentivized. And there's been some good success in the US through that. And also variable pricing models, which you see in this country with on-demand groceries, but also other countries do it for more traditional online delivery mechanics as well. So you would expect to see continuing experimentation, innovation, productivity improvement in those channels, because it's a must-have. When you're in a low-margin business like grocery, especially at the moment with a recession coming, a price war coming, everyone's matching the discounters on price points, you know, there's got to be innovation to drive productivity to resolve and square that circle, because there is no room for further consolidation in that industry. And you know, the CMA has made that very clear over the last couple of years. So but then in other industries, in as we've already seen, you would expect the pressure of those margins to play out in different ways. So further consolidation in apparel and accessories type industries, building on, you've already seen, you know, the market fundamentally transform with the demise of Debenhams and Arcadia Group. And you expect to see that continuing, and the rise of the, if you like, the platforms, both the, you know, the Boohoos and ASOSes of the world, who are obviously hoovering up some of those assets, but also the Next, M&Ss, et cetera, becoming more platform plays. You would expect that to continue, and that be a double down strategy. So the economies of scale and the infrastructure required to operate platforms become the real point of scale economics in those type of categories, if that makes sense. So that's another thing you would expect to see more of, especially as, you know, furlough plays out and government support eases away, and the implications of paying for the pandemic start to hit in the end of this year and into next year. You would expect there to be another bow wave of restructuring and consolidation in those non-essential categories.
The other thing that comes out in your research is consumers interested in environmental issues, ethical concerns. So what sort of stuff are consumers saying about those issues? I was struck by one quote I read in your research that consumers are particularly critical of hollow ethical claims. So what does that all mean for retailers, and how do they need to respond to that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's two big things came out of the research, and you just referred to one of them, which is, you know, the need for ethical and sustainability claims to be genuinely authentic, and a high degree of skepticism from consumers who observe retailers jumping on the sort of green bandwagon, if you like, and making a lot of claims aren't necessarily substantiated. So there's quite a lot of more inquiry and I'd say a high degree of skepticism about those claims, whereas in the past perhaps they may have been more readily accepted. And then the other thing, as you say, is just a general increase in the desire to see ethical and sustainable behaviours from the brands and from the retailers that consumers are buying from. And at the same time, the need to do this, even if at low price points. So there's the whole debate of values versus value, if you like, has become, you know, significantly more prominent through the course of the pandemic. And I guess the so what from it is that, you know, high values in the way that you source goods, the way the sustainability of the packaging, the way that they're provided to the customer, and great value are both now table stakes. So there's no room for one or the other. It has to be both. And the real imperative for retailers is working out how to demonstrate that in a way that resonates and is, you know, credible for the consumer moving forward.
What about sector trends? So we've seen consumer behavior respond very directly to, you know, the quirks of the pandemic. So you're at home, you need to kit out a home office, you know, so DIY sales and electronic sales have done really well. Similarly, grocery has increased as out of home, and hospitality has been shut. And conversely, you know, footwear and fashion and some of those other sectors, you know, it hasn't been a great time to be a retailer of suits, I would imagine. How do you see that all changing as we move forward and come and return to whatever the new normal is?
Well, Stephen, I think you hit the nail on the head there with whatever the new normal is. I mean, you would expect that some of those trends that we've seen accelerate during the pandemic would stick. So, you know, men's formal wear is unlikely ever to return to where it was previously. Yeah. So I think the days of everyone wearing suits and ties is largely over, with maybe a few exceptions in the financial industry. But But and also you would expect, based on the way that most large employers are shaping up to bring people back to work, which will be a more of a hybrid way of working between some at home, some in the office, you would expect that to have sort of long-term impacts on the need to have a well-kitted out home office, for example, but also on the way that that impacts city centres, which have traditionally been highly dependent on the working consumer, as it were. So some of that will just have an impact maybe for a couple of years as things go back to normal. Some things may be more permanent over time. So you would expect some of those trends to be there, and therefore retailers who serve those categories will be adjusting their mix and their promotional tactics to suit that, I suspect. But yeah, I think the other going to go back to what I said right at the beginning, which is, however, one thing we've all learned through this entire experience through the pandemic is that it's almost impossible to predict exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when we first shut our office over a year ago, we expected to be back in it a month later, yeah, and you know, a year or plus on, and still talking about reopening it. So things are quite difficult to predict, and whether another variant arrives and whether we end up with another lockdown, whatever. So nobody really knows. And I think that's the thing which I think really comes out time and time again, both in the research that we've done and in the discussions we're having with our clients, the retail community, is that ability to look forward and not believe too much of the trends that might be apparent now, because in 4-6 months' time, who really knows, but be really confident and build capability to adjust course, change mix, change channel tactics, and really have a leadership team that is thoroughly focused on adapting to consumer behaviors and changing the way that businesses operate in order to meet those needs and do so in a profitable way. So the whole agility, you know, next generation levels of efficiency and challenging every cost and every rationale or old legacy way of working, all of these things are the kind of competencies that you would expect successful retailers of the future would demonstrate. And I think that's the kind of key learning out of the pandemic that will hold people in you know, good stead moving forward.
A lot of the things you just said there, Matt, are those characteristics of a successful retail business. You know, they were important 14 months ago before the pandemic came along. And, you know, the pandemic has, quote, sort of changed everything. But a lot of that, the need to transform and to be agile and invest and respond to, you know, changing consumer behavior and so on and so forth, that was all already there. So it's been said that sort of COVID has changed everything and changed nothing, which I'm not sure I completely agree with. But looking ahead to the future, you know, what do you think? What do you think is going to be important?
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So it's changed everything, changed nothing. I think one thing it has changed though, and this really came home to me the other day. I was talking to one of the retail CEOs that I know, was saying that, you know, what the pandemic has forced is a change in attitude and a change in behaviour amongst senior team members within retailers to genuinely challenge everything that had been done before, and this sort of never the same again type mentality to bust through all of those barriers to change that existed previously because things had always been done that way, or it was just too difficult to change the way things work, change how people were structured, to change how we serve the customer, et cetera. All of those things have really been up for grabs during the pandemic. And it's slightly perverse to say it, but one of the few good things to come out of the pandemic is certainly from the retail management's perspective is that ability to challenge perceived ways of working and the old way of doing things has really accelerated. And therefore, whilst, you know, we were talking about personalized consumer marketing, we were talking about, you know, being better omnichannel, etc., all these things before the pandemic, that almost the shackles have come off, and the ability for management teams to genuinely be more radical in the way that they go after the opportunities presented by the shift in consumer behaviors is now certainly different, and I think that's going to be the legacy. And as those, and to be honest, the difference between the winners and the losers moving forward will be those that can really harness that new attitude, the capability that is offered by, you know, using data properly, etc., and working really, really carefully and closely with partners and network partners who can help them win in these marketplaces. So I think we've seen a shift. It's in some part it's an acceleration, in some parts it's actually just a different emphasis and a different level of being how radical people are and how ready they are to challenge old ways of working. And I think that's the big sort of, if you like, a summary of what we've seen in the marketplace, both in the research and within our clients.
I think that's a nice optimistic note to end on. I think we at BRC have been trying to push for pre-COVID, push for some time, that this process of transformation that retail is going through is about the reinvention of retail. And what you're talking about there is really, you know, if anything's been accelerated, it's the ability to reinvent and the ability to try and to reach that positive outcome that this can all bring. So hopefully that's a positive note in which we can bring things to an end. But Matt, it's been really interesting talking to you, and thank you for sparing the time. Thank you for joining us.
No problem at all, Stephen. Thanks very much.
So thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To find out more about Alex Partners Changing Consumer Priorities research, go to their website at alexpartners.com. If you'd like to find out more about the work of the BRC, visit our website, www.brc.org.uk.